The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And when I was reflecting about what I thought I'd talk about tonight, what came to me is to talk about emotions, being mindful of emotions. And this topic is actually, there's a lot to say about it. So I'm not going to try to do it all tonight. I'll just see how far we get, because I'd like to leave time for discussion as well. So I'll just speak for a while and then open it up for questions and then maybe speak for a little longer. We'll just see how it goes. Just try to keep it a little less formal this evening. So the working with emotions, being mindful of emotions, is a really helpful part of our mindfulness practice, both on the cushion and in our daily lives. On the cushion, if we're not familiar with being mindful of emotions, we can find ourselves kind of swept away by a storm of emotions and not particularly able to stay grounded in the present moment if we don't have the tools or the practice with staying grounded in the present moment with an emotion. So it's helpful to learn some tools for being mindful of our emotions. And it's helpful in our daily lives to learn how to be mindful of our emotions. A lot of the suffering we get into in our daily lives has to do with reactivity. It has to do with responding unskillfully to situations and to people. We get angry, we get frustrated, we get irritated, we get proud, we become overly excited, and we get a little out of balance with our emotional responses to the world. And so learning how to be mindful in our daily lives of our emotions is also very supportive. We begin to bring in a balance of, the mindfulness begins to bring in a balance so that we are not so pushed around by our emotions, but we can be more stable, more at ease with whatever is coming up in our experience. So in our sitting practice, we can be a little more, let's say, take a little more time with exploring our emotions. If something comes up for us while we're sitting in meditation, if we're paying attention to the breathing and a thought appears in our mind about something that happened yesterday or the day before yesterday, and it brings up an emotional wave, we can take the time to explore it when we're in sitting meditation. We don't have to push it aside in order to get back to the breathing. This is something I was pointing to in the guided meditation, that we can be mindful of anything. There doesn't need to be some hierarchy or some idea that the breath is a better thing to pay attention to than an emotion. Whatever we are cultivating our mindfulness on, we're cultivating our mindfulness, whether it's an emotion or the breath or a body sensation, the mindfulness is being cultivated. And that's the important piece. The mindfulness is what brings this sense of balance, of stability in. It's not staying with the breath that brings the balance and stability, although it can bring balance and stability to stay with the breath. The key is the mindfulness, the ability to be with what's happening without getting swept away into thoughts about it or into reactivity about it. So if we can be aware of our emotions as they come up in sitting, that's a fine place to cultivate our mindfulness. And when they come up in sitting, we can take time with it. We can really take time to investigate, explore. How does it feel in the body? What are the other moods and emotions that are associated with this feeling? And what are the thoughts around it? So we can really take some time to explore it when we're in our sitting practice. And over, I think this week and probably next week, I'll talk about some of the ways that we can bring our mindfulness to emotions, particularly difficult emotions. I think for the next couple of weeks, I'll mostly focus on talking about working with what we might call afflictive emotions, the emotions that are challenging for us, the ones that tend to lead us into suffering. In our daily lives, it's a little bit harder to try to stop everything. I mean, if an emotion comes up in our sitting practice, we don't have to get on with anything. We can just simply attend to that emotion. In our daily lives, we're often in the midst of doing something else. We're driving, or we're talking to our boss, or we're doing something for our partner. And it's like we can't just say, let's put everything on hold. I'm going to go sit down and pay attention to how this feels in my body. We have to kind of learn how to meet the feeling in a light way, not trying to have an agenda or an idea about how I need to be mindful of this, how detailed does the attention need to be on this. So in daily life, I like to encourage a really light approach, a kind of just beginning to learn how to recognize that emotions are coming up in our daily lives. Just the bare recognition of, oh, this is anger, this is frustration, this is sadness, this is excitement, so that we get a sense of these, how these feel for us, and we can recognize them and name them, but then we don't have to do too much more with them in our daily lives other than just to recognize and to go on with our lives. To not necessarily have this idea of everything has to stop while we be mindful of our emotions. That's one of the main things that I really like to encourage people in daily life practice, that the mindfulness doesn't have to feel like some heavy thing that's an addition to our lives, that we have to stop things in order to be mindful. Rather, I like to encourage people to see, can you just be mindful of the unfolding of life as it's happening in a very light way, just keeping track of what's happening moment to moment, not necessarily thinking, oh, I have to stop to pay attention. We can pay attention while we're in the midst of rapid activity, while we're in the midst of a conversation, we can be mindful. And so learning how to be mindful of emotions in this kind of a situation can be challenging. And this aspect of just learning to recognize emotions is one of the things I'd like to focus on tonight, just learning how to recognize our emotions as they come up. Sometimes we have a view or a belief or some kind of an agenda about difficult emotions with respect to our meditation practice, that, so this is referring to sitting on the cushion partly, that the difficult emotions, the challenging emotions, when they come up are something to get beyond, that they're in the way of our meditation practice. And this is absolutely not the case. The Buddha, in talking about meeting our experience, said that we're going to encounter suffering, and that these afflictive emotions are essentially a form of suffering. They're a form of they're a reactivity, often formed out of a meeting of some kind of pleasant, unpleasant experience. Something pleasant happens, we like it, we want it, and the emotional responses around wanting to have things kick into gear. Something unpleasant happens, we don't like it, we want to get rid of it, and a lot of the emotional reactivity around aversion and irritation and anger and annoyance begins to kick in. So the Buddha talked about being mindful of this kind of reactivity, of being mindful of suffering. He said that it's meant to be understood in talking about working with mindfulness with respect to difficult emotions. He didn't say they are meant to be gotten rid of. He said they are meant to be understood. Our suffering, our dissatisfaction, our stress, the movement in our mindfulness practice is to understand them, not to get rid of them. The understanding that I'm talking about and that the Buddha is referring to with respect to understanding suffering is not what we often think of as understanding. We often think about understanding meaning an intellectual kind of understanding. In this instance, the intellectual understanding about our emotions can be helpful at times, but that's not particularly or primarily what the Buddha is talking about. He's talking about an experiential understanding of our emotions. Typically, when we experience some strong emotion, we are pulled into our environment. There's something that happens, either somebody says something or does something or we encounter something that we react to. And in our typical way of being with emotions or responding or resonating around emotions, we are drawn out into the world to somehow deal with the thing out there, thinking, I think what we think is that if I deal with the thing out there, then the emotion, which is so difficult or unpleasant, will go away. Or if I get the thing out there, then I'll be able to hold on to this pleasant emotion, this liking of having a sense of control. If I can figure out how to control this thing, then that's a kind of a pleasant feeling. And if I can figure that out, then I'll be able to keep this pleasant feeling. So we typically orient to the world when we are in an emotional state. And we think that's what we're supposed to do, that if there's something unpleasant happening and we're responding to that with anger or aversion, then the thing we need to do is to figure out how to get rid of that thing in our environment or somehow take ourselves out of that environment. So the movement in mindfulness practice is to, rather than focus on the world out there, the place where it feels like the emotion is coming from, it feels like, you know, we are responding to something out there and we need to fix something out there or hold on to something out there. Rather than doing that with mindfulness of emotions, what the instruction is, or the movement is to turn towards the feeling. Not to try to get rid of it, but to understand it. What is this feeling? What is the cause of this feeling, not so much out there, but in here? You know, there's something out there that we are responding to, and yet, you know, we all know just through an act of reflection that the same thing could be happening to someone else and they would respond differently. You know, that suppose somebody says something to you, you know, something that triggers you into feeling dismissed. There's the thing that they said, and then there's some whole pattern inside of us that is triggered by that, what they said. And we can kind of, through an act of reflection, realize that if that same person had said that same thing to something else, that other person may or may not have reacted by feeling dismissed. So there's something inside of our minds that is reacting to the statement. So what is that? What is happening inside? That's the movement, turning towards our experience of the emotion to see if we can understand the emotion. So to just kind of get a framework of what the parts of emotions are in this turning towards emotions, there's several basic aspects of an emotion in this mind and body. Just letting go of the world out there, what an emotion is internally is a mental experience of the emotion, some kind of a mental feeling of the emotion. For instance, the emotion of fear has a kind of a feeling of wanting to be removed from the situation. There's a kind of a backing off feeling that the mind responds in the sense of kind of a get me out of here kind of feeling in the mind. So there's a mental component to the emotion. Then there are thoughts around the emotion, and these are different than the feeling. Particularly, I mean, just think about, for instance, fear. You know, just suppose you step off of a curb and you haven't looked, and suddenly you look up and you see that a car is coming at you. There's an immediate kind of sense of an alarm in the mind. That's the feeling of, that's the mental component of fear, that feeling of alarm. Then there may be a little bit later, some thoughts around that. Some thoughts of, wow, that was close. Or thoughts about how you know, just images or thoughts about how it might have turned out. You know, I might have been splashed across the pavement or in the hospital. Or, you know, there are all these thoughts that the story around the fear. And those are different from that feeling of alarm, the kind of thoughts that come around the emotion. So that's two parts. There's the feeling in the mind, there's the thoughts, there's a kind of a story around the emotion, and then there's the physical response in the body. So all three of these are going on. With fear, the physical response in the body might be something like contraction in the stomach, or tension in the throat, or tightness in the hands, or in the face, that there's, as the emotion sends a flood of chemicals through the body feels the emotion. So there's these three components of emotions. So in our mindfulness, we can learn to recognize emotions by learning to get familiar with these three different aspects of emotions. So recognizing emotions, it's helpful to learn to recognize our emotions. I found in my own early days of my practice that it was very hard for me to actually know what I was feeling, to know what the emotions were. I knew there were emotions there, but I wasn't particularly emotionally literate. It was hard for me to identify, well, this is sadness, and this is loneliness, and this is depression, and this is frustration. There were some that were very obvious, like anger was pretty obvious to me. If they got strong, there were some obviousness ones. But often I just found myself in this kind of haze of knowing that I was feeling things and feeling, oh, I didn't feel very good, or I felt kind of good, and that's about all I knew. I didn't have a lot of vocabulary for my emotions. And one of the ways that one of my teachers suggested for helping me to become more literate about my emotions was actually to create lists of emotions. And this, I found this to be quite helpful. He actually suggested I, you know, kind of find an emotion list. And they're actually, you know, more recently I've looked and I went to Google and Googled emotion list, and there's like a 6-page list of emotions on Google. So, you know, there's it's pretty good actually. It's, you know, it's got a lot of different different emotions, simple emotions, complex emotions. So this is a good place to start. You know, there are lists of emotions on the internet that you can use as a place to begin for helping helping you begin to tease apart different kinds of emotions. So for myself, I found that I tended to have a lot of what we might call aversive kinds of emotions. Anger, irritation, frustration, annoyance, rage, disappointment, those kinds of things. And I think that we each have a kind of familiar set of flavors of emotions. And that's a good place, actually, if you find that you need some support in identifying emotions and actually learning to recognize emotions. It can be helpful to see if you can identify a particular set of flavors of emotions, and then get really familiar with those flavors. Most of us, well, let's say the afflictive emotions tend to come out of greed, aversion, and delusion. These are the three basic roots that the difficult emotions tend to come out of. And all of us, we all tend to have one or another of these patterns as being a little more predominant than others. And this is actually a teaching in some of the Buddhist commentaries about what they call the Buddhist personality types or tendencies, something like that. And they're basically based in these three aspects. People tend to be responding to things out of greed a large part of the time, or out of aversion a large part of the time, or out of delusion a large part of the time. Most of us have one favorite out of those three and tend to orient in a way from that perspective. And so this can be helpful to get to know which of these three is most predominant for you. We all have a mixture of all of these. It's not like I only have aversion and I don't have greed and delusion. I've got plenty of greed and delusion. It's just that my kind of initial orientation to experience seems to be, as I began exploring it, seems to be, I don't like this. How can I get rid of this? So it was helpful for me to learn that about myself. So let's just do a little an exploration here right now to see if we can explore what each of your own tendencies might be. So let's just do a little reflection. So I'd like you to just close your eyes. And remember a time. See if you can remember a time when you were going into some place for the first time. The first time you entered some place. The first time you saw something. Allow yourself to call that up in your mind, the first time you went into that place. What was the place like? What was the room like? Or the whatever place it was, what was the place like? What were you seeing? What were you responding to? And if you're having trouble coming up with a place, just think about the first time you came here. And see if you can, in this recollection of going into this place for the first time, recall or recognize, what are your first impressions? Are they about things you like about the environment, the place that you're going into? Things you find beautiful or attractive? Are they about things that you don't like? Things you'd want to change or fix? Or is there a sense of not being sure what you're supposed to do or how you're supposed to be or where you're supposed to go? Just getting a sense of what your kind of immediate response is when you come into a place for the first time. And so you can open your eyes. Did you get a sense of whether there was a tendency towards the pleasant things in the environment or towards the unpleasant things, the things you wanted to fix or change, or a sense of confusion? Did you get a sense of how you respond when you go into a room? Is anybody willing to share what they noticed? Or, yeah, over here.
I remember.
We gotta use the mic.
Hello. So the image that came up in my mind was actually my college dorm room, which I was sharing with somebody. And I remember walking in, and I knew it was going to be small, but being startled by just how small this space was. I believe it was 10 by 16, and somehow two people were supposed to live and breathe in this space. And I remember our beds were exactly a foot and a half apart. And I remember walking in and just immediately being shocked by that and thinking, what am I going to do? This is, how am I going to function? How am I supposed to survive here? What can I do? What can I move? What can I change? Uh-huh. And obviously, to me, there were very negative emotions at that time.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Still are. And I put myself back there and was just overwhelmed by this sense of negativity about that experience.
Do you have a sense that that's a kind of a common way for you to respond to things?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. So this can be very revealing to us, this little exploration. So yeah, it's a good thing to notice. So I'll talk more about that in a minute. Yeah. Did you have something? Did somebody else? Over here.
When you started to talk about the aversion, delusion, and greed, I pretty much quickly identified my issues are around aversion. But when we did this exercise, there were things you were suggesting about, like, feeling positive about an environment. So I'm trying to seek out something that's pleasing to me. But I don't know if that is contradicting my notion of aversion is, you know, a challenge for me.
Well, I mean, we have a kind of an orientation towards how we respond, kind of our immediate response to the environment, whether it's wanting to move towards things that we like or away from things that we don't like. And if there are, I mean, so for instance, you know, everybody, even people who have a sense of, you know, that moving towards things they like may have a great deal of difficulty with aversion. My kind of way of thinking about this, just as an example, I know for myself, when I'm experiencing aversion to something, I tend to get stuck to that thing, trying to figure out how to get rid of it. So it's like, I'm stuck to that thing with sticky glue, trying to figure out how to push it away. Whereas somebody else might, seeing something averse in their environment, rather than get stuck to that thing, go, I don't like that thing. Let's find something else to deal with. I'm going to find something pleasant to deal with. So that might be how the greedy person responds to aversion, to say, okay, not that thing. I'm going to just ignore that thing, and I'm going to put my attention to someplace else.
Yeah, I just wanted to say one more thing about understanding the challenge of aversion is also moving towards acceptance of having a temperament. And when I've been doing a lot of studying about mindfulness, and one of the things that has come up is to understand that you can make a lot of changes. But if you try to beat your head against what your genetics and your heredity are in terms of temperament, it's if you understand that you have that and then accept it, then you're freer.
So just a comment about that. I wouldn't call it genetics, that we have this, I mean, we tend to have a predisposition for some reason or another, maybe in the womb or maybe the way we were raised, whatever. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why one person might have more of a tendency towards wanting pleasant things and other person having a tendency towards getting rid of unpleasant things. The practice of mindfulness is about accepting. It is about accepting and understanding the emotions that come up. And there is a transformation that happens with the mindfulness. You know, there's kind of one of the understandings is that, for instance, the aversive temperament is one that clearly understands these things are wrong, these things need to be fixed, you know, that kind of mind. And that aversive temperament with wisdom can become transformed into a discerning mind. So it becomes discerning. As opposed to averse, it recognizes this is the way it is. It's like this. This is the way things are. So it's not so much of a reactivity. So we're not going to necessarily transform our kind of underlying movement, but the reactivity can be transformed. And so the person who is greedy, that movement can get transformed into generosity and giving. So it can be transformed. So it's not just that the mindfulness, we just get to be mindful of things, this is the way we are, this is the way I'll always be, and well, I guess I'll just be a little bit more at ease around that. The mindfulness actually begins to transform it, which is an amazing thing that it does that, but it does have that capacity to transform.
That was very helpful, actually, to especially to think about discernment, transforming to discernment.
Uh-huh.
That's very helpful.
So the question was about delusion, what delusion might transform into, and the understanding about that is that the deluded mind tends to be one that's not very connected, not very, or it's kind of spacious in a spacey way, you know, the deluded mind. The deluded mind would tend to go into a room and not notice things. One teacher talked about being, she is a self-professed deluded type, this teacher, that, and she said that she went on a trip with a friend, and the friend was an aversive type, I believe, and when they walked into a room, her friend knew exactly which bed she wanted to be in, you know, how to be most away from the breeze, the best mosquito net so she wouldn't have the mosquito bites, all of that. So she would walk, her friend would walk into the room and immediately would say, "Can I have the bed by that bed?" And this teacher would say, "Oh, sure, yeah, whatever." So she was just kind of disconnected in a way. You're not really seeing things. That temperament is—it's close in a way to equanimity. It's not a true equanimity because it's not connecting with experience, and it's not an equanimity that is connecting with things as they are. It's an equanimity out of spacing out. But the deluded type is said to transform more into an equanimous or balanced mind.
I don't think that's my thing, but I was interested.
Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah, Larry.
I'm not sure which one this falls into. Delusion, I would imagine. I had forgotten my youngest daughter's birthday for the first time in 25 years. And she let me know it, big time. And I could feel my whole body go into this sense of pain, sadness. And then reverting back into a place of, look, get over it. You know, I make mistakes. I'm human. So I'm not sure if that's delusion or.
Which part, the get over it part, or?
Well, the part of feeling the pain.
The pain.
Yeah, I mean, I did forget.
Yeah, I mean that. The pain that we feel, I mean, some of it might be aversion of, you know, not wishing you hadn't disappointed your daughter. And yet, some of it could also be the sense of just a kind of a wholesome sadness for her suffering. And, you know, so I am going to talk about wholesome emotions, I think, in a couple weeks. But, so it sounds like there was a blending of some wholesome response there.
It cost me $50 in flowers.
Yeah, Irv.
Well, thank you very much for what you said and have been saying. I'm the aversive type in a very productive way, because what it does, I realize, what's underneath the aversion is fear. And aversion is a very good thing in order to avoid fear. I can, just as soon as I come into a room, I can be critical of the room because I'm fearful. And I never realized that fully until tonight. Last night I went to a social function, which was very pleasant, and all the people were very nice. I had absolutely no problem with them. But when I left, I knew something was wrong. I was not at ease. And what I realized was I was full of fear. And I was carefully evading my fear by being aversive.
And I think that's true. The aversion can kind of have a couple different responses. There can be that aversion of kind of lashing out against the environment. And as you say, that can kind of be a mask for fear. You know, so, two basic flavors of aversion. One, the pulling back, wanting to get yourself out of the environment, or somehow the feeling of being afraid in the environment. And then there's the lashing out, the wanting to change, to fix, to control, to judge the environment. So they can be cause and effect, one to the other. Yeah. Thank you for that comment. Yeah. And one more, and then I'll have a couple more things to say.
Thanks. With me, it's just like when we were doing the exercise, what came to my mind was having to get up and do a speaking engagement in front of a lot of people. I mean, I freeze up. I mean,
You're not alone.
It would throw me completely off balance. And I don't know where that's coming from, but that's
a big one for a lot of people. I'm not sure that's I wouldn't use that example as being necessarily completely indicative of your response in all situations. Because that situation seems to be one that generates a lot of fear for a lot of people. They claim it's one of the top things that people are afraid of, speaking in public. So,
I admire you for being able to do what you're doing.
So, getting a sense of which flavor is most predominant for you, you might, and this is what I did, is knowing that I was an aversive type, I went to the thesaurus, and I found, you know, the word aversion, anger, the ones that I knew were most prevalent for me, and I just started making lists. I'll read you some of my lists, because this is instructive, I think. Fear, anger, bitterness, resentment, hostility, dislike, rage, irritation, annoyance, worry, hatred, distrust, cruelty, discontent, frustration, aversion, dissatisfaction, loneliness, loathing, disapproval, disgust, fury, disrespect, disparagement, contempt, humiliation, unkindness, meanness, spitefulness, disdain, disquiet, anxiety, apprehension, dread, distress. So for me, I used a list like this to help me begin to recognize the varieties of aversion. So I'll give you a few words for some of the others as well. I haven't done the extensive lists for the others, but for greed, states like excitement, wanting, attachment, eagerness, pride, vanity, those kinds of states. For delusion, confusion, spaciness, boredom, anxiety, agitation, uncertainty, dullness. Those kinds of states would tend to become, would tend to happen more frequently with that kind of a temperament. So creating a list, I found at least creating a list was helpful. And what my teacher instructed me to do in creating this list was from time to time throughout the day, take out your list and see if there's any emotions on that list that actually resonate with the feeling that you're having. And if the list is broad enough, with enough variety, you may begin to discern and identify, begin to recognize emotions that you were previously not so familiar with. So this is one way to go about recognizing emotions. We have a sense of these emotions, I think. You know, if I say irritation versus annoyance versus anger versus rage, I think we all have a sense of some of the gradations along that terrain. So we can begin to identify the feelings with those gradations through looking at the words. Somehow the words help us to recognize the emotions. So that's one way through to recognizing emotions. Another way is in actually noticing a little bit about one of the other aspects of the three components of the emotions. So this first one that we've been talking about, looking at the word that matches the emotion, that's kind of going right to the feeling of the emotion. That we kind of know what fear is. We kind of know what anxiety is. And the word maps to some extent to those feelings. So the approach of creating the list of words and trying to identify an emotion, that's kind of going for that mood or tone, the feeling in the mind. It's going for just the emotion. Another way in is to begin to notice the thoughts that are happening in the mind. Now this takes some mindfulness, beginning to recognize what are the thoughts that are happening. Most of these emotions have a kind of a story that go with them. So for example, anger. What would you think the story of anger is? The thoughts that would appear in your mind if anger was present. What kind of thoughts would appear in your mind? Anybody? Yeah. Judgmental thoughts. Well, that's a kind of a conception of the kind of thoughts. Can you give me a kind of a phrase? You moron. Okay. I hate your guts. Okay. This is the story of I've been insulted.
I've been misused.
Yep. I'm not being seen, I'm not being heard. Yep, you've done me wrong. That kind of flavor.
The last line in Gone with the Wind. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. So yeah, that kind of thing. Getting familiar with those thoughts. Sometimes actually we find that we're in a world, a spinning world of thoughts, and those thoughts can give us a clue as to what the emotion is when we start to recognize them. So for instance, fear. What are fear? Fear thoughts. Something bad is going to happen. I'm losing control. I don't want to be here.
You don't care.
You don't care? Mm-hmm. So the thoughts if we can begin to get familiar with the thoughts, it can help to point us to an emotion. So as a kind of practical example of how this works, again, I was kind of an emotional illiterate, so I didn't really know what my emotions were too much. But on one retreat, I thought I was experiencing a lot of doubt. I felt like I didn't know what I was doing or how to engage in the practice. And one morning, I decided to ask a question about doubt in the meditation hall. This was on a retreat, and we had a period in the morning where we could ask questions. And so while I was framing the question, I noticed that the first two words of every way that I framed the question was, "I'm afraid. I'm afraid. I'm afraid." However I framed the question, it began with, "I'm afraid." And after hearing myself frame this question about six or seven times, I finally heard, "I'm afraid," repeated enough times that I thought, wow, maybe this is fear. Maybe this isn't doubt. And I didn't ever get a chance to ask my question, but I just got curious, and fear was everywhere. I would be walking in the hall, and I would see somebody, and there would be a flicker of fear, just as somebody new walked into the room. There'd be this flicker of fear. It was like, wow, I had no idea there was so much fear going. And by listening to my thoughts, I learned that there was some fear. So beginning to, for your particular favorite flavors of emotions, get familiar with the stories that are associated with those. What if is another good one for fear. What if? What if? What if? What if? So that's another helpful way to begin to recognize emotions. And we only have 2 minutes left, so I won't go into the next way. I'll go into that next week. But the another way to begin to learn, I'll just mention it so that you're not left without this piece also. Another way is through the third aspect of emotions. So there's the feeling, the mood, the tone, and the mind, which we can connect with through the vocabulary. There's the thoughts, which we can connect with through understanding the story of the emotion. And then there's the body. So getting familiar with how an emotion impacts the body. Really, really helpful. Now, it can also be deceptive because certain emotions, for instance, nervousness and excitement, can have some very similar physical experiences. So we need to use the whole package to help us understand what the emotion is. If we just focus on one piece, we might misinterpret the emotion by assigning something that it's not necessarily. And I'll go into some examples about that next week. But it's time to stop now. So thank you for your participation, and I hope to see some of you next week.